Today is May 13th, 2020. This is episode number 529 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, and listen, I'm going to be completely honest. Today has not yet been a good quote-unquote word day for me. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, and again, I'm just going to be honest, you should probably question everything about the show. Shoot us a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you over to our Facebook group. Our sponsor this week is Clean My Mac X. Later in the show, I'm going to tell you how to get 5% off this excellent software from MacPaw. And joining me this week from the other side of the pond is one Charlotte Henry. Charlotte?
Hello. Happy March the 75th.
75th?
It might be the 76th.
I think it's 73rd or 4th, but whatevs. Yes.
We're here.
We're here.
We're doing transatlantic podcasting, and it's all good.
Yeah, that's true. We live in sci-fi times that we can do this, you know.
We're literally living in the future. Actually, technically, I am living in your future, but anyway, we won't get into that.
You are. This is true.
Sort of
true. All right. Well, we have some fun topics today.
Yes.
It was a bit like pulling teeth.
I can confirm to listeners, though, that the words thing is not working for Brad all that great today. But we have given him an infusion of caffeine. So,
you know. We have. It's still being slowly injected into me, mm-hmm. kind of like mm-hmm. light. Mm-hmm. Or disinfectant.
Listen, you said it. I wasn't going to even say it. I was behaving myself.
Yeah, you're better the person than me. this is known.
Again, you said it, not me.
Yeah. All right. Well, you had, and I already forgot exactly how you said it, but you said it in a way that was really interesting to me about Apple's products.
There have been many of them, haven't there, Brian?
There have been many of them.
In short succession. Now, I know we maybe feel this a bit more because we spend a lot of our time looking out for new Apple products or hints of new Apple products. But it seems to me in fairly short order, and you'll be able to give me perhaps some more context, whether it's shorter order than usual, we've seen quite significant product updates from Apple. So we've had, I kind of got all the press releases up actually, because that's obviously the only way things are being announced at the moment.
Yeah.
We've had new iPad Pros with the backlit keyboard and the trackpad and the shiny. Mm-hmm. We've had the iPhone SE. Mm-hmm. We have had 13-inch MacBook Pros. Mm-hmm. We have I missed anything? Oh, we've had a major overhaul of Logic Pro X. Logic, no, it is Pro X because it's Logic Pro X 10.5.
It is Logic Pro 10 10.5.
No, that's ridiculous. I can't
cope
with that.
It is Logic Pro 10 10.5, but it is Clean My Mac X.
That's a lot for me to handle at the moment from the Logic side. But okay, Logic Pro 10 10.5.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about Logic Pro 10 10.5 on Thursday's Daily Observations with Kelly.
Yes, we will, and Brian and I will treat you to some of our latest recordings using the software. No, we won't. Don't worry, listeners. My point is, like, that's quite a long list. So there was the new iPad. When was that? iPad Pro was
February.
Became available April 15th. That's when it
wait a minute
became available to launch.
The new iPad Pro was April.
The press release. New Magic Key. Oh, that was the new Magic Keyboard.
Yeah.
So that's even before that. So that's another thing to throw in there.
Yeah, the iPad Pro and the keyboard were both announced at the same time, but the iPad Pro was available almost immediately, and the keyboard was not.
Right, so that's also April. So that's like over kind of what we, joking aside, we're now middle of May. So that's been a month where...
Yeah, but the iPad Pro, I think, was in February.
Was it in February? I think it was earlier than that. Anyway, we can, whatever, over a period of... No, I'm so pleased I'm right. It was March.
Was it March? It was March 18th. You called it April. Neither of us was correct.
We were in the middle. Anyway, the press release for the unveiling the iPad Pro with LiDAR scanner and trackpad support in iPadOS was March 18th. So it's basically been 2 months of fairly regular updated or new products.
In the middle of a pandemic.
In the middle of a global pandemic.
Yep.
Which the pandemics tend to be.
Yes.
So I've had disagreements over this with our good friend John Martellaro, who thinks, who cares? Well, actually, no, sorry, that's being disingenuous to him. He thinks actually it's the right thing for Apple to do because people require their products. They can actually be very useful to people working from home and trying to keep in contact with loved ones. And also, it's Apple's responsibility to keep releasing its products. It's a view I understand. I didn't necessarily agree with it, but I can't, as ever, I can't fault John's logic.
And I would make that even more simple. I would simply say that Apple's job is to make new products, and if it could do so safely, that's its job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, we also forgot the same day as the iPad Pro, a new MacBook Air, and I think there was an upgraded Mac Mini hidden in there as well, wasn't there?
I don't think the Mac Mini was updated. But the mere fact that we're not sure is to your point that Apple has been pushing out a steady diet of new products.
Yeah, it's basically just under 2 months there has been a flow of significant products. These are not little twists and tweaks just for the sake of PR. These are serious products. And significant products for Apple as a company, which is obviously why I felt compelled to release them, even in the difficult circumstances. So, and I totally understand the kind of point of view John and you are putting forward. And also, let's be clear, Apple has a responsibility to its shareholders to continue to behave as a profitable, profit-making, responsible company. Apple is not a charity. Apple is one of the biggest companies in the world, and it has a responsibility to all those involved to try and maintain that position. And if it judges that business-wise the best thing to do is to release these products, it is incumbent on the company to do so. I get all of that. It made me feel slightly icky going, oh, look, a new shiny, when thousands upon thousands of people are ill and dying around the world. But whatever, I get it. I do get why
the new products are not contributing to the illness.
Totally. I mean, that's the thing.
If Apple was keeping its Apple stores open in the middle of stay-at-home orders,
no, quite the opposite.
We would be having an entirely different discussion.
No. Apple has been very strict around opening of Apple stores and the conditions required for them to both reopen and for staff and the safety precautions for staff and customers, I think.
And paying staff
throughout it. Yes, absolutely. You're quite right. So all that bit's fine. It was just whether from a PR standpoint, it looked a bit icky. I guess they took the view that it doesn't so badly. And frankly, I've said this as well to both Kelly and John. I understand that logistically you can't just have this stuff. This stuff is built and developed and ready to ship significant periods before the world collapsed. And therefore, you can't just leave this stuff in storage hangers forever.
I'll throw in another thing.
And Tim Cook is never going to leave stuff in storage hangers forever.
I'll throw in another thing. Apple is giving a gift of normalcy to its customers.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, it makes me feel a lot happier to write about a new iPhone SE than it does to write about the complications of a COVID-19 contact tracing app. And I'm sure someone with a new 13-inch MacBook Pro turning up at their house, if they can still afford it in these circumstances, lifts their mood, no doubt. I totally get that as well. And yeah, I'm all for all sorts of things trying to help maintain normality.
And none of that, of course, detracts from the human tragedy of untold thousands dying and continuing to die, and people being sick, and people not being able to see their loved ones, and people being stuck at home. All of those things are still awful, and Apple releasing new products does not erase that. I just don't think it adds to it.
No, it probably doesn't add to it. I would never claim that. It's just, again, it was always from my take was always a kind of twitchy PR person's point of view. Is this the type of thing we should be doing? But as you say, I'm sure for some people, getting a new iPhone or a new MacBook Pro has actually been a little bit of a treat in difficult times. So that's also no bad thing. And also, let's be clear, Apple has contributed significantly in numerous ways in attempts to help fight and protect people from COVID-19. So I'm not decrying those efforts either. But it's interesting also the range of these products. There's not particularly a theme, right? Not that I can identify. We've gone from MacBook Air to MacBook Pro to iPhone to Logic Pro 10.
Yes, and I would also add that some of
which
this,
is cool.
That it is cool. Some of what we're talking about here, the fact that, you know, we've had a prolific 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
These product announcements would have been some of these product announcements would have been concentrated into one media event.
I think that's a very fair point.
And so, you know, it we may end up having like a slightly different perspective on the reality that they've been coming out steadily, because they wouldn't have appeared. It would have appeared as more of a, you know, a blast of new products before. And then we also have very solid rumors of a new Apple TV 4K device and new iMacs. And
yes.
I think many of us are expecting a new, well, the new iMac could actually be an iMac Pro. We don't know what that's going to be.
No, but what we do know is as soon as we hit publish on this show, there's definitely going to be the press release announcing it, just to spy us.
Yeah, that's
But I do think your point about there being a stream of products as opposed to one big glitzy event with a kind of one more thing moment is quite an interesting one, and it's quite an important one. And I wonder if this will have taught Apple or encouraged Apple to do things a slightly different way. Will we see more of this product by press release as at least for the next couple of years while things are will inevitably be relatively uncertain?
That's an interesting idea.
I just wonder if they'll go, oh, this worked actually, and people still learned about our products, and we saved having to fly a load of journalists to California or New York or wherever, and everyone
Apple
got the information.
Apple doesn't pay for that.
No, most of the journalists will pay for it. But you know what I mean? Apple still has to put on the event and invite the journalists and hope that that doesn't come out. And, you know, there's a lot of logistics involved in that, many of which are reduced, and many points of leaks as well are reduced by doing it this way.
So
I wonder.
There's zero chance that Apple got the same amount of press that it would have in non-pandemic circumstances if it had been doing compared to what doing a media event. There is no way that Apple got the same amount of press that it would normally.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do.
I wonder if it got. That's an interesting one. I wonder if it got more of a stream of press, of reviews, of people talking about a new Apple thing than if Because I often think, actually, in those big events where you learn 5, 6, 7 new things, some of it can get lost, actually. And I wonder if each one of these has been a more definitive thing.
That's it's certainly possible, and I don't even know how you'd measure it. And I can't,
no.
I can't point to any definitive data to back up my viewpoint here. But my gut says that Apple gets substantially more press overall from a keynote, especially from the mainstream places. So not from us, not from our competitors, not even maybe from the sort of general tech site, but from the mainstream press, I think Apple gets more coverage.
Yeah, but we're not quite comparing like for like. I would be in, you know, new iPhone doesn't get coverage in a pandemic, even if Tim Cook flies off a building showing it off. But I know what you mean. There's not the clips for the TV news in the same way. Yeah, I know what you mean. I get that.
I accept your apology.
But I do. Behave yourself. This is what he does to me the whole time. I'm really pleased you're doing this on air so the listeners know how you pick on me.
Of my jerkery, yeah.
But there's part of me that thinks that actually even in normal, I don't know, I'm torn. I think there could be some advantages in the kind of steady flow of it. I think also I understand your point about a kind of big bang of exciting new stuff for a company. I get that as well.
Yeah, I'm just glad to see I'm glad to see Apple iterating its products. We went through a way too long a period where Apple was not iterating its products. And it is delightful to me, especially as a Mac fan, to see the steady diet of new products coming out. At this point, the iMac Pro is the only thing that should have been updated and has not been updated. And hopefully that's going to be addressed before WWDC, or by WWDC, I should say.
Yes, which we will talk about in a minute. I'm still looking for the Mac Mini, because I'm sure there is a new Mac Mini out and about in the world.
All right, let's find out.
I'm having a look. I think in that March 18th release, they hid a Mac Mini in there. Mac Mini also updated today. I accept your apology, Brian Chaffin.
When? What day was it announced?
It was on the March 18th with the new MacBook Air.
Oh,
I remember Andrew writing about it.
I offer you my apologies. I was completely
wrong. Mic drop.
I was completely wrong. Now, you see the difference there, right? And how we handle that is that I say directly, I am sorry that you were correct and I was completely wrong. That's how I handle it.
Anyway, I would quite like this upgraded Mac Mini, although I love mine and can also has the advantage I can also cook eggs on it. So that's good as well.
That is good. You know what else is good?
What?
Clean my Mac X, and I'm going to tell you about it. No matter how flawless and perfect macOS may seem, it is often guilty of multiple issues and vulnerabilities that come up with each new release version. Clean My Mac X is an app that handles these issues and helps top up your Mac's performance. Here's what Clean My Mac X does. It helps to declutter your Mac, cache, logs, old mail attachments. These things are scattered throughout your Mac's system. Clean My Mac X looks for these particular files and makes it easy for you to delete them, which allows you to save gigabytes of space. I've used that a lot. Another superpower of Clean My Mac X is the ability to handle all performance draining processes on your Mac. Its optimization feature is way more straightforward than the built-in activity monitor. Clean My Mac X also gives you more control over apps and their files. You can find out what apps and programs you have on your Mac and uninstall those that you don't need. When it comes to optimizing your Mac system, Clean My Mac X is also extremely good at that. It pushes all of the unused bits of memory, removes temporary files, and performs other maintenance tasks to unleash your Mac's full potential. And here's what you do. I'm going to add. I've been using Clean My Mac X since it was released. I used a previous version of Clean My Mac before that. I love this software. I use it. Can't imagine running my Mac without it. It's one of those must-have utilities to me. So you visit macpod.com/podcast to download Clean My Mac X today and use coupon code ACM2020 to save 5%. Upon visiting macpod.com/podcast, click the Buy Now button and then scroll to the bottom of your screen to enter the code, that's ACM2020, before completing your purchase. Clean My Mac X is also available on the Apple App Store, but if you want to save that 5%, make sure you get it from macpod.com/podcast. And again, that coupon code is ACM2020. I want to thank MacPaw and Clean My Mac X very much for sponsoring this week's episode of ACM. All right, Charlotte, our second topic today is the digital WWDC, and you are excited about that.
I am excited, but because I have never, for a variety of reasons, including the Atlantic Ocean, been able to go to WWDC. Same is true with CES.
When we physically met, before you started working for us again, you were in San Jose. What were you in San Jose for?
Cisco?
Oh, that's right. Cisco actually flew you out.
Cisco, yeah, I got to hang out at Cisco HQ, meet Mr. Cisco himself. It was a really interesting experience, actually. And, you know, and Brian was tasked, I can tell this briefly, Brian was tasked with helping me fight jet lag by supplying me with Mexican food and making sure I stayed awake.
Yes, we did that. What did that take you to El Patio?
I can't remember all that because I was very jet lagged. I just remember good Mexican food and being made to stay awake, and it is exactly what the situation required.
Excellent. Very, very glad to have facilitated that.
Exactly. All
right. So why are you excited about the digital WWDC?
Because it means I can go to WWDC in some form. And I've always been intrigued by it. I've always wanted to see how it works. I've always wanted to go. And this, even before these circumstances, this makes it a more viable way for me on here in the UK to be able to go. And that's very exciting. And I will learn more about Apple as a company by virtue of that. I will learn more about the products I both use and write about by virtue of that. And that's exciting to me.
I think you may be in for some disappointment along those lines. This WWDC is aimed at developers. You're not going to be learning about products.
Well, no, but I'll be learning about how the developers work with the products, what products, what things developers can use. I'm not expecting and here's a new shiny toy, but it makes you learn more about the things that Apple already has and how they can be created, and just in general that whole Apple ecosystem. You learn a lot more about it. And I'm very excited for that.
I have a pronouncement. I have a prediction. You're going to be very disappointed.
Why do you have to be such a downer, Brian? We're having such a nice time.
I know. And it's kind of how I roll. Now, we should talk about it afterwards.
I would definitely like to do that. Yeah. I would like to give you my impressions.
Yeah.
Because I would also like to hear people who have been to the real life event multiple times, impressions, having looked at it digitally.
Well, here's what I think is extra interesting about this, is I think that you would derive a lot from being at the physical WWDC because of all the extracurricular events.
I can well imagine that.
I think that would be a terrific environment for you. I think that you would make lots of fantastic contacts. You'd learn more about some of the companies in the ecosystem. I think you'd meeting more developers and meeting more company heads and things like that would be just a fantastic experience for you, both personally and professionally. And that's the one thing
that
the WWDC, the digital WWDC, won't have. It won't have any of that extracurricular stuff.
So, but by extracurricular, you mean drinks at the bar?
I don't drink. I'm a teetotaler. So I wasn't thinking about the drinks at the bar. That is that is a thing at these extracurricular events. But I actually meant the FaceTime with people, especially. So you longtime listeners and Charlotte both know that I've been doing this for a very long time. To wit, I'm old. And
listen, you said it, not me.
Yet it's true, even though I said it. And there is the FaceTime with vendors, FaceTime with companies, was a big part of Macworld, right? And not just seeing old friends, actually getting that you know. That physical FaceTime with companies new and old, and seeing their products and having these products pitched to you and being able to actually handle them, all of those things, that was a big part of Macworld for us as press. Now, the same thing remains true of CES, even though CES is what spread COVID-19 to the Bay Area. But, you know, whatever. that's another discussion altogether. That FaceTime with companies is an important aspect of that event too. And it's not the same. It's because it's a completely different set of people that go to WWDC. Yeah. You do have some of the PR people, right? There are some familiar faces, especially the companies that are there in force and throwing events, right? You're going to see those. You're going to see those PR people. You're going to see those company executives. But the vast majority of people who are attending WWDC are just, you know, rank and file developers. They're coders.
Yeah, but in a way, that's who we as press learn more from, because we get to learn. Yeah, definitely fair. We get to learn about their experience, you know, building for Apple devices and products.
And it's people from all over the world. And it's people who don't normally necessarily interface with the public or the press as a normal part of their jobs. And so, for all of those reasons, I think that you physically being at WWDC would be a fantastic thing for you professionally and personally.
I'd be so up for it 1 year. You know, when in 2025 we can go on an airplane again or something.
hopefully we'll have a vaccine before then. Again, another show, another topic. It's interesting to me that you're excited about the digital version, when from my perspective, the thing that you would be most excited about won't be a part of it.
And I definitely agree with your assessment of, you know, the kind of extracurricular advantages of being there in person. But I think you can still learn a lot about what is going on through this. And it's an easier way for me to access at least part of it.
Yes, that is true. And it will also be good for you professionally to see what the sessions actually are about. Because even if that aspect of it is disappointing, which I suspect will be the case, it'll still be good for you to know, to have that.
Yeah, no, context. I'm really interested in dialing into some of the sessions. I just think it's less good in some ways, but it's also more democratic and open in other ways, because it gives more people more access. And I think that's, especially with a company like Apple that controls things quite a lot, that's not a bad thing.
I agree with that. And I have suspected for the last many weeks now that regardless of whether or not Apple makes WWDC 2021 or 2022 an in-person event again, that Apple's going to find that the advantages of making this a sort of global live event is going to outweigh the control.
Explain? How do you mean?
Well,
by getting more people involved, it will be better for Apple, you're saying?
Yes. Better for the developer community and better for Apple by extension.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I think probably you're right that it will be a mix of both in the future.
Because there's going to be no shortage of people who still want to go to the in-person event.
100%.
Even if they can see it. I mean, you know, Apple sells out of WWDC tickets in, well, now since they've been doing the lottery, it's essentially pre-sold out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And even before they were doing the lottery, the event would sell out in, you know, hours or minutes. So Apple can have its cake and eat it too here. Apple can really make this a global event where it welcomes, where it's catering. It's not just like, oh, yeah, later you can watch these sessions, which has been the case for a while. Right.
Yeah, I was going to say they've been gradually opening it up because I remember watching, I think I watched sessions last year and we dialed into things and could get some of the kind of content that was coming out of WWDC.
Yeah, I think that Apple's going to find that making that a thing and making this a global event is going to make everybody feel more part of the Apple community.
Yeah, I 100%
agree. Apple ecosystem, more its developers to feel more included. And this is especially true, I think, for coders and developers and companies in emerging markets and other places where they might not have the budgets to get to San Jose, even if they could get a ticket.
Yep. Couldn't agree with you more.
All right. Well, I'm glad that we could settle that then. All right. Well, we're going to find out. I can't wait to talk to you about it afterwards.
I'm really interested to see how it all plays out, actually. And I understand your skepticism, but I'm genuinely really interested and excited to see the sessions and to see how this digital open format works.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I'm interested to see. I'm interested to see what kind of, like, how Apple handles the question aspect, I guess. You know, FaceTime with developers is you talk to the coders and developers who go to WWDC, and that chance to get some hands-on FaceTime with Apple's engineers is one of the most valuable things to them. And that you can't do that when millions of people are going to be tuning in.
No, although Apple did say in its releases and kind of subsequent comments about it, it has tried to emphasize that they will try and make as many of those equivalents and sessions as possible as they are able to.
Yeah, and how they do that and how that works, I'm really interested to see.
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. I had a question for you before we started recording. And that question was, are there any products that you wish Apple would make? So in other words, like things that you wish you could get the Apple take on.
Yes. Now, this was an interesting question, and it took me a minute to have a think. And then I looked down at my wrist, and I am wearing a dugout during these times where I want to keep my exercise up and can walk and so on. I have dug out my old original Fitbit Flex.
Okay.
From many, many moons ago.
Okay.
And it's fine. It does the job. There's an app on my iPhone and it does exactly what I need. It is a pedometer. Let's not make it any grander than that. And it works great. I would really, really like the Apple version of a fitness tracker that is not the Apple Watch. Because while I think Apple has done brilliantly in how it has compacted the fitness element and the style and fashion element and the communication element into one product, the Apple Watch, I know you're into your very much so into your real, if you like, watches, and I always wear a proper watch as well. And not digital, not smartwatch, if you like. And I would But I also wear a fitness tracker a lot. And so I would love to see the kind of very stylish Apple version of a fitness tracker. So that would be at a vastly reduced cost to the Apple Watch, but still has some of the fitness tracking capabilities that the Apple Watch has. It would feed into the health app on your phone directly and all those kind of things. I would, if they could find a way of pitching that at, say, £99, what's that, £199, maybe $120, that kind of price range, that would really interest me. How I kind of put it when we were talking off air was, if they could do the fitness tracker version of the iPod Touch, where you had some of the iOS capabilities, but you didn't have the full iPhone capabilities, it was a much lower price point, that would really interest me. So I could wear a watch that I like, I could wear a fitness tracker that was nice because it was designed by Apple, and that would really appeal to me.
The question is, I get why you want it, and how much of why you want it is Apple's product design, and how much of why you want it is being able to have this data being strictly and only in Apple's ecosystem. In other words, protected, private.
Yeah, a large part of it is to do with, I just think it would look really nice. I think it would just be a really nice, well-designed product. That's most of my interest in it. I think that's a valid point about the security and privacy element.
But that wasn't on your mind, though.
Being in the Apple ecosystem provides. I don't think there's anything, you know, I think you can be fairly comfortable with Fitbit, and I think there's some attempts by Google to buy, actually. But yeah.
There you go.
Brian, be nice.
Well, I don't want to be nice. I don't want to be nice. Right. I want my data to be mine. But keep
going. Fine. And so that is another reason why I would like the product. The thing that made me originally think about it was the design element.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. I Apple could have done that.
Of course it could, yeah.
Before it did the Apple Watch. I kind of don't think that's a product that Apple will end up making.
I think it probably won't now. I think they would probably feel to them like it was a step backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought of another thing that I would like Apple to make.
Okay.
I'd like a proper Apple Smart TV set. That would be nice. I know people have said this for years.
A physical TV.
An actual TV set.
Why?
Think how pretty it would be.
It's true. And also think about how it wouldn't be spying on you.
It wouldn't be spying on you. It would be very pretty. You would need a different remote, probably.
Yeah, that's the, you know, that's
based
the thing.
On the existing evidence.
The Apple TV remote is garbage. And the Apple TV interface, and in this case, like speaking to something that you've written about recently,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I say Apple TV interface, are we talking about the interface for the physical Apple TV device, or are we talking about the interface for the Apple TV app? And,
right.
And, like, Apple hasn't... I almost use profanity. That stuff ain't right yet. It's not.
Weird, isn't it? How it's, yeah, I mean, I wrote a column on it earlier this week about how the UI in the various iterations of Apple TV is confusing. It's making it harder for Apple TV Plus to catch on, I think. The naming is a bit of a mess now. So making an actual physical television set would probably only add to those problems. That doesn't stop me wanting one because I think it would be really nice.
Fair enough. And I would like to have one for the privacy reasons, the the design reasons, I think it would be insanely expensive. You know,
it would be so expensive.
We know that Apple was working on a TV. There's a long-running joke about Gene Munster always talking about the Apple TV and how he was wrong. He was not wrong when he was talking about it. We know that Apple was working on a TV set, and we know that Apple decided that they couldn't control enough aspects of that TV set to have it be something that they could continue to make, and that's why they abandoned it. So, yeah, I would enjoy having that Apple TV set. Of course, I would also enjoy having a standalone Apple monitor display. But, you know, Apple won't. There's something I'd like Apple to make displays.
Well, there's the Mac Pro display.
That's a reference monitor.
It's a very expensive monitor.
It's a reference monitor. It has a very specific target market. And I don't even...
Yes, it does have a very specific target
It's
market.
Not a standalone display. It's a reference monitor. That is...
No, I mean, I'm not... You're right. I'm not buying it to plug into my Mac Mini. You're totally right.
Also, don't get me wrong. I would love to have it just to have it. But that, you know, that's a product that's not aimed at me in any way, shape, or form.
No, totally. I get that.
And I would also like to see Apple make mesh routers. I hate that Apple stopped making the AirPort product line.
Yeah. Interesting. You're saying that on a day where up at MacObserver.com, I've got a story about Apple selling Eero mesh Wi-Fi routers being available directly from Apple.com now, which is a kind of interesting shift.
And when Charlotte says routers for American ears, that would be a router. Just want to make sure the translation was working, Charlotte. I do not push buttons.
I'm not rising to this.
I do not push buttons. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm really pleased that the listeners have an insight into how I'm treated day in, day out. It's really important.
You are treated like the queen that you are. You know it. We adore you at the Mac Observer. So, Apple did announce that it's selling Eero routers and that those
Eero actually announced it, but yeah.
You're right. Sorry, Eero announced that. And it is going to be at Apple.com, right? Yes. On the Apple Store. They will have HomeKit support.
Yeah, I think it was the HomeKit support that has changed the game, actually, for Apple, not surprisingly.
Well, so why again, couldn't Apple that have seems been doing to be on the list the last of 3 years?
Yeah.
I wish Apple would be making its own mesh routers.
Yeah, that seems to... But I suspect this move with Eero means that's not going to happen.
Yeah, probably not. I don't think Apple's going to get back into that game. I think it was a mistake for them to leave it in the first place. And here's why. It's not just... it's not because that was some key Apple market. It's because with Apple devices controlling the hardware and the software, and HomeKit being a thing, and Siri being a thing, and HomePods being a thing, and Apple TV being a thing, Apple should have been allowing...
Apple TV being multiple things.
Fair enough. Apple should have been allowing us this entire time to have another Apple device controlling our data at home. That's the real reason why I wish Apple was making mesh routers is so that Apple technology, Apple privacy, Apple's business model was in charge of the data at my home.
Yeah.
And I believe that that's why Apple should be making its own routers. The Eero with HomeKit support is better than what we had before that, at least in terms of those issues I just named. But it's still not what I really want. And that would be to have Apple in charge of my data at home.
I think Apple would make very good routers. I think I can understand why they can't be bothered to do it when you have a company like Eero who buy all, by all reports, does a pretty good job of it. I find this... I'm taking this off on a tangent slightly, and you feel free to stop me at any point. But I do feel this idea that we're happy if Apple has all our data and no one else, and we're just in that one ecosystem. Just because I've never been someone that's operated like that or used products like that, I can't quite get my head around it. Because while Apple products have always been the kind of center of my setup for a long time, since I was at university too many years ago, the Apple products have always been the center of kind of my computing world, if you like. I don't necessarily feel compelled to only have products from Apple and only have my data with Apple, but I understand why people do. I think most of the products that I haven't bought from Apple, the Apple version has been better. I do think that, but that's a different thing.
It's security and privacy are my thing, and I definitely care about that more than a lot of people do, especially
Yeah, and you're right to care about it, and I care about it, and it's deeply, deeply important. And it's right that, you know, it's right that we keep referencing that. I just think I don't quite get the idea that we trust one company above all else. I definitely agree Apple are better. I'm not one of those people that thinks it's Apple good, everyone else bad.
It's Apple better than everyone else. Everyone else's business model is predicated on screwing us. That's the thing. Everyone else's business model is predicated on screwing us. Well, actually, Microsoft, I would say today that Microsoft's business model is not to screw us.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think Microsoft is like that.
Different companies do different levels and different approaches to screwing us, Apple is the company that's making all of the things with not built on the notion of screwing us. That is the only reason why I want to be in Apple's ecosystem.
Yes, but the point about the Apple ecosystem, I mean, I've done the Hotel California analogy, I think, a few times with the Apple ecosystem. You know, you can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. It's once you're in the Apple ecosystem, it's very easy, and you know, it's part of the Apple's genius that once you're in the ecosystem, you don't really want to leave it, because why would you? It's easy. Everything's there. Moving from one product to the other is amazing. And
they're not built to screw us.
No, they're just built for you to buy more of their stuff.
Yeah.
That's fine. Which is fine.
Yeah, I don't think that Apple's a charity. I don't think that Apple's some altruistic entity.
I don't think they even pretend to be fair.
No, and nor should they. It's
of course.
Apple has figured out how to sell stuff and make a profit at it, a fabulous profit at that.
Without using your... Yeah, and they don't... It's not the kind of Google hoarding, data hoarding of Google. That's, you know, designed to target adverts at you. It's not the Amazon collection of data, which is designed to make you buy more stuff from Amazon. It's different. I totally get that.
But
I don't even know if there is a... I don't even know if there's a but. I think it's tempting for us to put Apple on a pedestal for these type of things, just because we like their products. And I think Apple does really, really, really good stuff with privacy and security. And I definitely agree with lots of the reasons why you trust them with your data more than you trust other companies with your data. 100 million%. But I also think, you know, I find that notion of putting a $1 trillion company on a pedestal like that quite disconcerting.
I don't believe I do. Well, so, you know, everyone is the hero of their own story. I don't.
You are a hero, Brian Chaffin.
I don't think that I put Apple on a pedestal. I think that my thoughts about Apple's products and ecosystem are based on logic and reason first and foremost. But certainly reasonable human beings can disagree on that particular topic. I will merely iterate again that everyone else's business model is predicated on screwing me, and Apple's isn't. And for me, that's sort of like
I think that's slightly unfair on some companies, and I don't think And as I say, Apple's probably not trying to screw you, but it is trying to take a lot of money from you. And
for sure. But they're offering you the kind of value that I want.
It's why it's the like the best. Biggest company in the world. Fine. Cool. That's why I'm sitting here using multiple Apple devices, because they're good.
All right. Fair enough. So listen, to iterate, you can visit macpod.com/podcast to download Clean My Mac 10. Oh, goodness gracious. I'm doing the wrong thing there. As a matter of fact, you can visit, I'm going to iterate what I said before, macpod.com/podcast to download Clean My Mac X today and use coupon code ACM2020 to receive 5% off. Right? That's awesome. And I appreciate them sponsoring. And Charlotte, I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. Really fun conversation.
Yeah, it was a fun conversation, actually. Yeah, I'm very much...
I'm so surprised.
Who knew? Who knew that it could actually be fun? Wasn't expecting it to be fun at all. I kid. All right, and on that happy note, we're going to do this. And then I'm going to say, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question... Write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week. Completely shocked.